It's May 18th, 2018, and BSJ is huge in China. I'm Six Detmar.
And I'm huge, Nick Cease, and this is Bottle Crow Reborn, a Dota 2 podcast where we talk about Dota 2 on a podcast. Welcome to episode 97.
Huge, huge, man.
Is it open?
It is.
There it's a resurgence. So how's your Windows update going?
So I never have any trouble with Windows updates.
Really?
Uh-huh.
You probably keep it simple and you don't have literally 10 audio devices that get renamed every time, I guess.
I don't have a soundboard.
Probably smarter. Yeah. Well, that's your loss, I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure everybody you play with, they said, you know, it's fun to play with Six and all, but he doesn't have a soundboard, so.
You know what the other thing is, though?
I don't.
It is true that, like, 10% of the time when I fire up Audacity, my computer blue screens, so my drivers are probably in a bad state.
It's true. It's the drivers, or it's Windows' fault, or maybe it's a segment fault. Oh, that's a... Not... That's a... You can just kick me out now.
Nick, we had weeks of Dota where we played Dota.
We did. An entire 1 week of Dota today. Today. That's how this works. We would like to talk about, well, so late night, like around 11 p.m. midnight, Six has been getting on, and we've been playing, like, we played a few one-game evenings this week, I think.
They're nice.
It's been good, yeah. It's kind of a crapshoot, right? You know, one game of Dota. But I don't know if it's any less of a crapshoot to play more in terms of whether it'll be a trash game where you get stomped or you have a frustrating teammate. Or you can just have this little... like a nugget of joy, and it reminds you why you like playing Dota. And I think our little nugget of joy this week was playing with a gold Techies player. He was level 13 or 14 in Dota Plus. He had all sorts of great voice lines, and he was on the mic a lot, and he was very active, and he carried us, kind of.
He was a lot. He did a lot, but also he carried us sort of emotionally, right?
Like, yeah, it's very important, like, to keep our morale up.
Yeah, I mean, like, I was made to offlane that game, which has been happening to me more recently. And I actually have some sick strats about that we'll talk about later. So I was playing like Clockwork, and it was a tough lane, right? They were tri-laning against me, but it was fine because this Techies came to help, and like number one. Came to help, and we got some work done. And number two, we were just having a good time up there. He was just a chatty, friendly dude.
Yeah, always helpful. Whenever he died, we would flame him in the joking way that I like to flame people, like strangers. And then whenever I died, we'd get flamed. It was good. I love mutually flaming ourselves. Like, you know, whenever we die, we also have to flame ourselves. I just like a nice flaming atmosphere. Get a little char, a little smoke.
Let's see, I say a good seer.
Seal all my juices in.
Yeah, he was a lot more. He had a lot more of a lane presence than I expected.
Yeah, for Techies. I don't know. Like, I've been playing more Techies, like I talked about, but it feels like it feels very easy to lose your lane very hard and not get levels when you go off lane. Maybe it's just my tendency to, like, I love the mind game, the mind game of like, where has Techies spent his time putting all these mines. So maybe just sit my butt in lane, my three butts. Oh, that's right. I wanted to do a little related mini lore of the week because I didn't know the three Techies' names are named Squee, Spleen, and Spoon, which, yeah.
Yep. That's a fact.
Is that offensive to you? Is that too League of Legends? Is it too silly?
I mean, it's dumb, but, you know, it's whatever.
I mean, absolutely it's dumb, but Techies... himself is pretty dumb.
Here's the thing, is almost all Dota lore is kind of dumb.
That's the beauty.
Do you remember when we did the lore for Sniper? Were you here when we did Sniper's lore?
I think.
Or it might have been before your time. Probably. I don't know.
What is it? Give me two seconds. Two sentences.
There was a prophecy that one day there'd be a person who sniped so good that they were the best sniper who ever lived.
One day
he shot a bullet so good that he was the prophesied one and he would snipe real good.
Nope.
It's like Jesus, but replace every adjective with shoot.
And he gathered together 12 bullets from across the land.
Right. It's really bad. It's really bad.
Wow, that's great. Good to know. So much lore.
Why do you need a prophecy that someone's going to be really good at shooting? Why
Everything
do you need a
is better
that?
With a prophecy. You know, like, we're coming up on episode 100, but what if instead I prophesized what would happen in episode 100? I prophesized that
What's
we would
gonna happen?
Have an episode 100. I don't know. Who's to say?
Well, you got to prophesize.
I got to prophesize. I believe we...
You better prophesize.
We go into our crow cocoon. That's how crows work. And when we come out, we're a beautiful mule.
I thought you were going to say butterfly, and then we could change our name to Bottle Butterfly.
Buttle Crow.
It's not like the name crow. Bottle Crow means anything anymore. So,
but at the same time, does anything mean anything anymore?
You're just salty about the two-week patch schedule.
Anyway. No. I'm salty because I thought Navi was back after not being I thought Navi was back again.
Mm-hmm.
But now they've kicked LeBron. They've picked up... They picked up. I forgot.
Velhior.
Fedor Velhior Ruskin. Ruskin. Yeah, I'm sorry. So bad. They picked him up and they've withdrawn from ESL Birmingham, and they said they're going to like boot camp to try to focus on TI. So they've given up on their DPC points that they had.
But, I mean, also, that might have something to do with the fact that the format for ESL Birmingham is trash.
That is true. Yeah, like, so ESL's tournaments, they've been kind of widely criticized every time they happen for being like, wait, what the hell is this format? Why is this so bad for multiple reasons? This time in ESL Birmingham, which is the next upcoming major after the current MDL Changsha, I'm sure Emma might come in at some time this episode. We'll see. Basically, your first game is a best of one. Four groups of four teams, I can't remember. But your first game is a best of one, okay? And this decides that if your next series will be for getting top six in the tournament or for elimination. So it's possible you lose one best of one and then you lose one best of three and you're done. You could play three games.
That seems bad.
It seems bad for a major with, you know, a bunch of teams. It seems pretty stupid because it means you're...
It would seem bad for a minor, actually.
It would seem bad for viewers. ESL doesn't care about viewers, though, because they're on Facebook or something. I don't fucking know. Like, this is obviously a bad format. Like, it's a GSL format for the groups, but it's so bad. Like, the way the groups are drawn changes or, like, affects everything. Like, if you get a bad group, then, like, fuck it. You know, your top two, three teams in the scene could just eliminate each other. It's so bad. And it's, like, there's logistical problems, and that's why they try to minimize the number of games. But, like, fucking, you gotta suck it up at some point, man. If you're a major and you're getting fed $500,000 by Valve, like, you gotta have some semblance of pretending you're having competitive integrity, that goddamn phrase, in this video game that you're hosting a thing for. Like, MDL Changsha, every team who comes there plays at least 10 matches. 10 meaningful matches is what you get to play. Like, I even think maybe that's too many. Like, I think you could cut down and that would be fine. But, like,
what about three? Three is smaller than 10.
Three is the minimum amount you can play in Birmingham. And a lot of...
Right, that's what I'm saying. So three it sounds like you nailed it.
Like, okay. Six?
It seems like
six,
you can't
please.
Be satisfied.
Six.
Yeah, what?
I'm so picky. Oh, God, fucking... fucking numbers, man. Can I speak in Roman numerals? Yeah. So it's just another case of being... I don't know, not necessarily being sad that there is no overarching guide by Valve on how to run things, but more being disappointed in how those with freedom choose to run their tournaments. Hmm. More disappointment in ESL.
That's fair.
But hey, MDL Changsha should be good. China's getting fucking everything right this past year. Like, we barely have any ace drama. Like, there's still the ace drama with the former Wings players, and there's probably a bad thing about, you know, their coalition they have. But we don't hear about it a lot. And, like, all their majors, they're so good. All their events, like DAC, MDL Changsha was looking good. They're selling, at MDL Changsha, they're selling the Eska perfume that I think Slacks made some stupid video about in, some sort of Dota 2 event where SCCC was there. They made this SCCC perfume, and they actually made like three different kinds, and they're selling it there. They have good like figurines or like statues stuff that people like to buy sometimes. China's got their shit together.
I didn't watch the Slacks video. How did he describe the scent, the aroma?
The thing is, the Slacks video is from a little while ago, at least a few months, and it described a hypothetical cologne called Eska.
Okay.
And now there's three different kinds of SCC perfume. Let me read the names to you. Perfume. It appears you can't order it online, which, a shame. But let's see. We've got... I'm going to their official merchandising store. Oh, I'm going to some sort of Chinese website. I don't know. There was one thing based on IO, and it was blue. There was one that was red, and they had, you know, Dota 2 names.
Hmm.
Why can't we get our shit together?
Because NA Dota, worse Dota. That's just as true in organizing as it is in, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we only had one Dota 2 event here, and Captain's Draft. Captain's Draft was great. I was there. It was cold, but it was fun.
Yeah, that's true. And Birmingham isn't exactly the United States, so that's kind of a bad...
I mean, it's the United Kingdom, so that's... I'm pretty sure the same thing. I went to high school, so, you know.
Mm. Oh, okay. Sorry, I didn't, so...
Yeah, I figured.
So, week in Dota stuff. I want to talk about the hottest new strat hitting the offlane, right?
Oh, perfect.
We all know that the offlane sucks.
Absolutely. Suicide.
We all know that the offlane is unpleasant, and most of the time all you can hope for is just to get some experience, maybe a couple of last hits here and there, and not die, right?
That's the main objective for me these days, not die.
What's the best way to do that, Nick? What's your hottest strat?
I was watching a Purge streamer video, and he was talking about blocking, and he's like, you know, I've realized recently I should really just focus on blocking in the offlane. So the past few... you know, weeks when I've been playing offlane, I've focused on getting a great block. And that seems to, like, net me a decent amount of XP. I often get level 2.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So, that's garbage.
Okay. That's fair.
I mean, you know, with some heroes, there's not much else you can do, right? I understand. But I'm about to blow your mind. Except for I'm not, because I think I've already told you. But, you know.
I don't know what you're talking about. So,
Figure the best way to soak experience is if they don't know you're there. But obviously, if you pick like Ricky or Bounty Hunter or Clinks, those aren't good offlaners. Like, okay, you got some experience, but those heroes need farm or something to be of any effect.
Yes.
So what you really need to do is you need someone who can be good as an offlaner, but who can also blend in.
Sort of camouflage, use their surroundings to their advantage.
So you pick Monkey King offlane. And you go into the trees, and you turn into a tree.
And you sit there.
And you go get a drink.
Go to the bathroom.
You just won the offlane. You did a good job. When they wander off, you slip out, grab a couple of last hits.
Yeah.
When they come back, you slip back into the trees. You turn back into a tree.
Yep. It's not horrible.
It works.
I've heard of worse strats.
Like, way better than it should.
Yes.
It's a very stupid strategy, but it works actually really well.
Yes, I forgot what this was happening. Yeah, when you formulated it. Was this the game where you didn't take Tree Spring on Monkey King until, like, level 6?
No, that was my support game, unfortunately. Okay. That game, I was just fucking out of it. I was playing, like, trash that game.
Lots of things went wrong that game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You were going back to you were suddenly on my side for the Jingu Mastery versus Tree Spring debate.
Oh no, I've come around on it in like.
Well, I've come around on it though.
Yeah, it's so much more situational. I've like a big change That's was true. When we were initially arguing it, there wasn't the sound effect.
The sound effect actually, Jingu was permanent. You never lost the buff on Monkey King. It was better. Like, the damage was better, I think. Yeah.
Both of these abilities were stronger when we were having this argument. Yeah. But I feel like, especially with enemies being able to hear Monkey King winding up the pounce, that really fucks over his ganking ability.
Yeah.
So.
Sorry. Long follow-up. There we go.
The Eternal segment gets another mention.
Another thing that just won't die, Valve just refuses to take old abilities out of the game. Welcome to your favorite segment, Morphling Bug of the Week. It turns out when Morphling copies Death Prophet with his ult, is it still called Morph Replicate? I don't fucking know anymore, man. He got the old passive Witchcraft, which upgraded... What did it do? It just upgraded all of her abilities, right? Like, outright, it added damage.
It gave movement speed, and it gave more ghosts on Exorcism. I don't know if it did anything else.
I think it did something on Cryptswarm, too, and it might have... I think it improved Silence, too. It was one of those weird abilities that just, like, increased everything.
Yeah, it's been so long now since she got Spirit Siphon, and it felt like such a good upgrade for her.
Increases the potency of her spells, so move speed, crypt swarm, and silence mana reduction, and cooldown reduction, and exorcism spirit increase. Wow. Yeah, but no, Spirit Siphon is the best. It's far less boring. But yes, apparently that was still in the game, and somehow when Morphling copies Death Prophet, he was kidding Witchcraft. So, there you go. Morphling Bug of the Week. It reminds me of when in some patch, they changed Drow's silence, and they changed her old silence, which is still in the code, because I couldn't possibly know why. I couldn't possibly
What I've always been told is that you don't, I've only been told this in the context of games, but, like, that often dependencies in code are set up in such unpredictable ways that you don't remove anything, basically.
Yeah.
Unless you have to.
Yeah. But, I mean, they know what they're doing. Like, I've taken a look at the files and stuff when I was looking at trying to, like, play around with mods and stuff. Like, the way they have abilities coded, it's smart. Like, it's intelligent, so they can just add and remove abilities and tweak numbers very easily. It's just, you know, it's literally just text and stuff. I don't know, man. just Valve things, I guess. We'll never know. Unless we get a developer on to ask him.
Wow.
Wouldn't it be nice to get the chef behind the spaghetti code? Be interesting. But like with Apple, it'll just...
For Jackie's Corner?
For Jackie's Chow.
Jackie's
Chow. And we would
Jackie's
ask
corner.
Them... Jackie's Corner. Jackie's Corner. Eternal Envy, go in the corner.
I think I was mixing up Jackie's Chow and Jack's Corner.
Jack's Corner? Jack has a corner?
Jack BBQ. KBBQ? Yeah, remember when he used to have this little, the little corner where he talked about... Yeah.
At the desk with a machine at that one Dota 2 event.
No, it was a bizarrely deep pull.
That was great.
for an unconscious bot.
It was excellent. Thank you. You know what's not excellent, though?
What?
Shitty figurine? Statues?
Statuettes?
Statuettes, I guess. I feel like I'm missing the word in my vocabulary for this, but the Roshan statuette thing that you got from last year's battle pass for getting battle pass level fucking 2000, which we know people who hit, you just actually loaded Dota 2, if you can see in the bottom right of your screen. Interesting. Maybe he knows. Apparently the quality assurance on these, or perhaps all of them, they look like shit. A lot of them look like shit. Most of them look like shit. They're just, like, impressively bad, actually. Like, they're injection molded with plastic or something, and they just leave the mold marks. So, like, you know, you have a mold. It's in two pieces, right? You inject something, and then you break apart the mold. There's going to be some material that leaks out into the crack between the two halves. And they just, like, left that there and then mounted it on, like, the bottom plate and shipped it out. They didn't put the color on. They missed, apparently, a lot of the details that were supposed to be on this model. And it just sucked. And everybody was up in arms, and it was a whole drama thing. And then Valve instantly says, okay, we'll send you a new one. So apparently they're working on a new one, but I don't know. Will they get that next year? Like, how do these things take so long?
Yeah,
I don't understand a lot of the time.
I mean, like, that happens to other, you know, like, you see, like, Kickstarters where they're like, okay, we put out the game. We'll fulfill physical rewards later. You know?
I mean, that kind of thing I can understand because, like, Kickstarters and stuff that have rewards or, you know, Patreons, whatever, that's not the main thing. Or, like, you know, they're trying to start a new thing. They're very intensely crunching on something else.
And it's, like, a bunch of people who aren't maybe, like, this isn't their area of expertise, but they sort of promise to do it.
They are asking for money because they
kind
don't
of like,
have
kind of like Valve.
Small indie company. Like, you do this crowdfunding thing because you don't have capital, right? You don't have the resources necessary to start your thing. Valve has fucking so much money. Just, like, God.
Can we do some, like, cross-post Valve drama?
Sure.
So, there's this thing going on right now.
Please explain this to me, actually, because I've heard you talk about this, but I have no idea what you mean.
Okay, so basically, Valve is messaging some creators of certain, mostly visual novels, which is a genre of game which is mostly just like interactive, like almost like a choose-your-own-adventure, right? Interactive text games, usually with accompanying images. And Valve is sending messages to some ones that are more adult in content and saying, hey, you have 2 weeks to modify your game to be less, you know, like, risque, or you're getting pulled from Steam. And this is weird for a couple of reasons. One, like, almost all of these developers have been like, hey, we came to Valve and we're like, hey, we're running this by you, is this okay? And Valve said yes and was fine with it for years and is suddenly changing their minds.
Wow.
Without establishing, like, what needs to be changed, they're just like, this is no longer okay. It's like, what part of it? They don't know. And also they're applying this rule really selectively where it's like, basically it seems like they're targeting anime titty games is the quick pitch, right? Where it's like, oh no, this game where it's like, you play a match 3 game and that you see an anime girl in her underwear, that's unacceptable. But The Witcher 3, where characters just have sex on camera, like, well, it's 3D, so that's fine.
It's all about the dimensional discrimination.
There's a game called House Party that's on Steam where there is literally a button to whip out your dick. Like, there's literally just a button to do that. And that game's not getting any fucking takedown notices. It's like Valve, once again, showing it feels like this happening at the same time as this Roshan thing. It's like, how many more reminders do we need that Valve's, like, do what you're passionate about cult attitude at their studio is, I'm sure, fun for their employees and makes them ridiculously irresponsible, and I'm so fed up with it.
Yeah, it just means like it's all about the polish, right? They don't polish shit. They do, like, they accomplish a lot of impressive things. Steam as a platform itself, the fact that it exists, it's a very impressive thing, all that. But then, like, their polish and their ability to, their likelihood to follow through on things is miserable.
Amateur?
It's why people call them a small indie company, because just like a small indie company, sometimes shit just gets dropped, even though they have so much money and staff. They just, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I guess it doesn't surprise me. It does surprise me there's no, like, I guess, porn category on Steam.
Yeah, I that's what they should do. I imagine it's sort of a situation where it's like, okay, we'd have to add a new system for, like, actually validating ages and not just having the, are you over 18? Okay, come on in.
Would you?
Which is what they
do. Would you, though?
I mean, well.
You might be right. Fucking.
There are some bills being pushed through the United States Congress right now that are harder on pornography and sex work than our currently existing laws, and it is, I don't think, a coincidence that this happens right now.
Yeah, I was going to say, actually, especially in the fucking U.S., I could see Valve, like, yeah, especially if they see the writing on the wall that shit's going to change and become more difficult, I could see them just saying, fuck it, get off, like, we're not going to deal with this, or especially we're not going to deal with this right now.
It's like, we could either create a system to make this work that would be, you know, like, we'd have to create this whole thing, and we have to validate ages, or we could just kick them off the store and not
Valve,
really lose that much money.
Or Valve, we could just
money.
Not have... like, Valve doesn't like being forced into things, right? They could hire a team that could develop the proper, I guess, I don't know. It's not a lot of work. You'd have to hire more legal people, honestly, which is probably the thing you'd have to do, or task your legal people with this shit. But I guess it makes sense. They're just like, nope, no thanks. Especially because localizing the rules, like we talked about, you know, Australia, I think, was suing Valve. The Netherlands might be suing Valve. So it's just, you know, another thing they don't want to have to deal with in terms of.
And they're like, well, we could be more responsible to avoid getting sued, or we could just shut people down for no reason. It's like, okay.
I don't know if there is a good solution. I understand why they're doing it. But yeah, it is so stupid.
I don't think there's a good no work solution, but I do think they picked one of the worst solutions where they're like, "Oh, we'll just kick these people off with no real warning and telling them they need to change but not telling them what they need to change, and also being super inconsistent and hypocritical about who we send it to."
Yeah. Like, they're so close to what they should have done, but what they should have done is had like a fucking Valve lawyer write up a thing. Or, you know, come up with some sort of terms of use, like, you know, user agreement shit, put that in there, and then just have fucking legal criteria that gets kind of, like, chewed down to this list of what you can and can't have in your game. I don't know. The whole thing is stupid. I don't know. Just have a fucking 18-plus category.
Yeah. Or just, you know, just be universal and say, like, okay, games that have, like, basically pornographic content are no-go. Like... They're not even doing
but,
that.
So
they're just saying these ones.
I hate the thought of that, too, because...
I do, too. I think it's a bad solution. But I'm saying if that's the direction they're going to go, they didn't even... Even in their bad direction, they half-assed it.
Yeah. it's very Valve. There's not direct money to be made. They don't have the staff to directly address it. So
They just don't want to have it.
Well, yeah, this... Yeah.
So I'm small, working on a new project. It's called I'm on company. Vacation.
They gotta go to Hawaii soon, man. Oh, no,
I have to roll my desk over to this cruise ship.
Oh. Sorry, I can't hear you over the sound of this martini.
I think I dislike Valve more, like, every month. Every month, I'm just, like, less and less and less. I'm just not into it anymore.
Darn.
Remember when they made TF2? And it was like, hey, this is really cool.
Remember when they made video games? I'm waiting to see Artifact. Any day now, we'll get Artifact news, surely. Probably not. We'll see.
Probably not.
You'll hear it here whenever I hear about it.
So spectated one of my games that went real badly.
Yeah, I think you were a disruptor, mm-hmm. and just nothing was going right for you.
Yeah, no, it's just one of those games where the enemy lineup is really good at getting on top of you and has a lot of CC, and you end up just, like, using Glimpse to stop yourself from dying every fight.
Yep.
It was rough.
Yes, but while I was spectating you, I think we're like going to play a game after. This was one of our late night one game or two game stints, I think. I watched you, and I, like, especially in team fights or approaching team fights, it made me so uncomfortable to watch your player perspective because I saw how you were moving your camera, and it was so different than what I would do. And I hadn't thought about that kind of thing in a while. Like, you're, you know, stop me if I'm wrong. It seems like you're mostly an edge panner. You only edge pan.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And it seemed like to me, you were missing, not that you were missing, it was hard for you to see what was going on where you were approaching a lot of the time. And it reminded me of how, like, I think I used to be a complete edge pan user, because I don't even know if I had the button bound. Now I'm... a lot of the time a click and dragger. So I use my middle mouse button. I press down on the scroll wheel and then that lets me drag the camera. And I really like using that way. And then sometimes, like when I do a block at the beginning, I'll hold spacebar or I'll hold one to center the camera on my hero. Mm-hmm. But besides that, I find myself more often than not using the click and drag method. And I hadn't thought about it well. We also know people who are dirty, dirty WASDiers. Who use WASD for their camera, and they are the next level because I do not understand how they do it. It's always amazing to watch.
I don't perceive any issues. Like, you mentioned, like, oh, you must have trouble seeing where you're going. Like, I've never noticed that.
It was more when... So, you were on Dire, right? Yeah, you were at the top. You were on Dire. and you were approaching the Radiant Jungle, like I think this was near the end, and there was a fight going on close to their tier two on the bot side in Radiant Jungle, and you were running in. Your team was already fighting, I think. It's like I wanted to pan over and see what was happening, but your player's perspective was like you edge panning and then, like, you know, you were pathing around, right? You were pathing to get there. And it just, like, in that situation, what I would do, I would just, like, right-click even on the minimap, probably, and then I'd instantly put my... I'd, like, left-click on the minimap to see what was going on there. Put my camera in the teamfight, see what was going on, and then click and drag around to see, like, where the best angle was for me to get in, or if I had a good spell to throw that was long-range or something. And it was just... It was very interesting to watch you going in, and then, you know, I'm not on free camera. I almost wanted to go to free camera because I was so uncomfortable not knowing what was going on in that team fight. It was a weird
Yeah, I felt like I knew. I don't know. Like, it's... I tend to, in those situations, I don't put my camera on the fight and then move towards it. I flick glance at it now and then. I don't know, I can't remember the specific moment you're talking about, but, like, it's not like I just center the camera on myself and just go. I glance at where I'm going.
I don't mean to say that, yeah. It was just, I realized how much I look at the team fight versus looking where I'm going. Like, I will die all the time. Like, I'm not trying to say it's better or not. I will die all the time because I'm trying to find my optimal way to contribute to a team fight, and then the one hero that isn't there just insta-gibs me, right?
Yeah, that's especially as, like, especially as a squishy, that's a big part. I, like, my camera use changes because I'm worried about someone jumping me on the way there.
Yeah, and the thing is, whenever I play Oracle, also I've been playing so much Oracle, I love Oracle. Oracle is the best. I always go Aetherlens, and I always go the Cast Strange talent, and so I get to ult people from, like, two screens away. So I always have to be cognizant of where people are and how much HP they are in a team fight.
Sure.
That's my habits.
All right. Well, I think we... I do want to say a few other quick little things.
Okay. Wait.
About my week in Dota, which is... I want to say that roll queue is great, and you're wrong.
How many roll queue games have you played?
Like 8, maybe?
Wow.
I played a lot.
Wow. Did you always queue as support?
Yes. I have never not queued as support in roll queue. Usually I find a game pretty fast.
I was going to say, yeah.
I had one earlier today. I tried to queue at like 10:30 here on the Pacific time. And I queued as a support, and after 7 minutes, I was like, okay, never mind.
7 minutes? That's not too bad.
No, I mean, like, I just canceled it, though. No, I was like, because I was one of those, it's one of those times where you queue and then you immediately are like, do I want to play?
Yeah, no, it gives you a lot of time to think. There's a good shitpost on the Dota 2 subreddit now about somebody who I think queued for mid, and then there's, you know, a saga of them in this 90-minute queue. It's a good shitpost. You should read it.
I did, actually.
Oh, excellent. They achieved
I don't know if the listeners did, so, yeah.
It's like, yeah, just do something good with your time instead of playing Dota 2. It's like, you know, maybe I shouldn't do something else with my time.
But generally, getting matches very fast and getting teams that are very cooperative and very, like, I haven't gotten anyone, like, you were really worried about people trolling and just, like refusing to play the role. I haven't seen any of that.
That's good.
I've seen, like, I've had to, like, in a nice way, I keep having to fight people on who buys the courier. Because it's just like, no, really, I'm a Dazzle. You should let me get the courier. It's fine. And they're like, okay, that makes sense. Like, it's been really nice. And the other thing is, I'm starting to. So I've always, you know, our friend Jesse over at Dire Times, always likes to refer to me as a heal bot. I'm that often that type of defensive support player.
Yeah.
But I've been trying to play more aggressive supports recently, and it's a fun time.
Who have you been playing?
I've been playing a lot of Monkey King, roaming. I've been playing Disruptor, who feels like not like traditionally aggressive, but the way you end
up playing him. He's more of an initiator, right? Dazzle doesn't have shit. Oracle doesn't really have shit for initiating.
Also Lion and Dark Willow.
Oh, yeah.
So those are fun. Lion is whew. You feel like such a dickhead. It's great.
Yes. There are fish so much of the time.
Yeah. And the fact that you can't purge it now is just, it's just my favorite. We were laning against an Abaddon and it was like, nope, I don't care about your shields. You can shield your carry. This is going to be a fish still. Yeah. I don't care.
Well, that's good, I guess. I don't know. I think I've played a few more, maybe one or two more since we last talked, and it was fine. It seemed like normal. The thing is, I wonder how much of it is that it's Battle Pass restricted. Because last year we had seasonal, what did they call it? I think they called it seasonal MMR, where only if you bought the Battle Pass, you got this exclusive like Battle Pass queue, and you got to recalibrate and stuff. I wonder how much of it is that, because...
Yeah.
I mean, like, you decrease the chance that somebody in a, like, a LAN cafe who's not really, I guess, taking the game seriously, you know, I don't want to sound pretentious, you know, they're less likely to take the game super seriously if they're in, you know, a LAN cafe or just, like, playing for fun or something. That sounds really bad. You know what I mean, though, probably. So I wonder there's an aspect of that.
I definitely think there's a big part of it. Like, I get a lot of, like, I think the part that isn't is me not having to fight people on support, because the people who are picking support want to play support. Mm-hmm. But, like, the fact that I've gotten so many people who are like, everyone is on mic and everyone's friendly and cooperative, that seems like a Battle Pass thing. That seems like a, hey, we're all career doters here.
We all, like, paid $10 for a fucking free video game.
And we've all gotten past our rager stage of hating Dota and just are like, no, this is life now, so let's get along.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I'm glad you've found a nice place.
I'm glad that I convinced Valve to put it in the game, and I'm looking forward to getting my next idea.
That's great. I can't wait until you just switch to playing League of Legends then.
Yeah, no problem.
You know, I did patch League of Legends the other day.
Poppy's a good design. Lux is a good design. Talia, good design. Okay. Those are fun characters.
Yeah. Is there
Talia's kind of Earthshakery.
Hmm.
Mostly just has like the world's biggest fissure.
Yeah. I do remember that. I'd never played with her while she was in the game, I mean. But yeah. It's League of Legends.
Mm-hmm.
It's good.
Is it?
Probably not. I don't know. Well, I'll do a little investigative reporting, maybe. Or maybe not.
Oh man, it's May. That's a bummer. I was gonna be like, we should do I was gonna not mention it on air, but be like, we should do an April Fool's episode where we play League of Legends and just talk about League of Legends.
But you mentioned how much you hate April Fool's on our April Fool's episode.
I hate April Fool's that are like trying to trick people. No, if it's like the kind
if we're
of April
embracing
Fool's
a
content,
goof, it's okay.
And if it's like you're like okay, so back when I was doing more articles, every April Fool's we would do like reviews of like snacks and stuff. Like, we're not tricking you. It's just sort of like, hey, it's April Fool's. Let's be a little more lighthearted and let's talk about Oreos or soda.
Okay,
you know,
yeah,
that's good April Fool's content.
Okay, good. I mean, I think I agree. Maybe we didn't really dig to the heart of your April Fool's, you know. Dislike.
Yeah, and I was probably at the time, I was probably pretty hot off of a bunch of people being like, they announced Half-Life 3, and I was like, shut the fuck up.
What'd you get? Gotcha.
Yeah. Do you have any else from your week of Dota you want to hit up?
Do I? I don't think I do. It's been good.
Actually, you know what? I'm gonna check something.
Uh-oh. My win rate? It's probably been pretty bad.
Oh, okay, never mind. I was going to be like, did I play more Dota than you this week? No. I did all right, but actually, I came closer than you might think, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. I played
I probably played too much Dota for... I'm finishing up. I have three weeks till I graduate college, so... Finishing up work. I probably should be playing a little bit less, but hey.
Well, at least you're not playing Mutation Mode.
That's what I wanted to talk about. You hate Mutation Mode, and I think it can be situationally okay. Some of the mutations are garbage.
Okay, here's one thing I don't understand. Why is Mutation Mode not Turbo? Why are you locked into this gimmicky dumb shit for the length of an entire Dota match? Because it's like, hey, listen, it's like, hey, here's 20 minutes of ridiculousness. It's like, okay, that's not what I'm gonna do, but like, okay,
it's not. It needs to put the pedal to the metal a little bit more. I think I would agree. Mm-hmm. It really depends on the mutations. Like every day you get a new set, and sometimes it's just like, oh. Like, I forget. There was one day it was like super runes. Runes spawn more often, and you do a tiny bit of damage when you die in an AoE. And it's just like, yeah, no thanks. And so now it's put a sour taste in my mouth for mutation mode as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but then you get some fun ones. There's the one where everyone gets like a free blink dagger that doesn't get disabled by damage. And it's like, oh, this actually has some really neat implications. Or like,
There was
that one where everyone starts at level 6, and that was fucked.
Well, we had horrible heroes for that. Absolutely garbage heroes for that. But there was one where it was almost like Earth mode from League of Legends, where they just like destroyed everybody's cooldowns, where the mutation was cooldowns are reduced by half, and your mana regeneration is doubled. Regeneration. And that was good. I think I played techies, and I put out so many mines. That was a good time.
Hmm. All right, well, are you ready to move on to Jackie's Chow?
Yes. Here we go.
Nick, you are more experienced in the world of Asian cuisine than I am, as far as preparing it, I would say.
It seems that way. Mm-hmm. A little bit.
I've always been intimidated. Really? It's one of those things. Yeah, because it's like, I feel like there are techniques and just base level ingredients that I'm not used to working with. And I'm very good at making a task out to be way more terrifying than it is.
Yeah, I can understand.
That was the case this week, on Sunday, when I made okonomiyaki and miso soup. And I was like, this is gonna be a disaster. This is gonna be like, I'm gonna flop so hard. This is gonna be ridiculous.
Okonomiyaki is like a Japanese cabbage pancake, right?
Mm-hmm.
Best way to describe it? Probably not. Okay. And
that's
pretty
spot on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm sure I've had it at some point. I should try making it.
It sounds really good. I made it for my roommates, and this is the second time this has ever happened with my roommates. Is we finish the meal, and first off, clean it up pretty quick.
Clean plates.
And then one of my roommates turned to me and was like, "You need to make this again." And I was like, "Okay, I'll." And they're like, "No, you don't. Soon." It's like,
do you have any cabbage though?
Actually, the sticking point is more the okonomiyaki flour, because
you
need
special flour.
You don't have to, but you really should, because it's gonna have some powdered Japanese yam and daikon in it.
Okay.
And also you need some tenkatsu, and you need some stuff. We can talk about that. That's a topic for a different day, I think. It could be for today, I guess. We'll see how long miso soup takes us. How many times have you made miso soup, Nick?
Probably a lot. Like, not hundreds, probably, because my Asian cuisine, I don't know, obsession, I've been over the past year making Asian stuff more often, just because, not necessarily I like it more, I guess it's, maybe it is. It's something I hadn't had a lot, like, growing up, so it's interesting to learn to cook it better. And also, it's honestly really easy to do basic, simple stuff a lot of the time. Like, a rice dish, you can do all sorts of stuff if you have a meat, if you have a vegetable. I am pretty good at, like, stir-frying that and just making up a sauce out of ingredients, out of thin air, and then putting it on rice. And, like, that is 70% of the way to a really tasty dish. And so that's just something I'll throw together to eat. Noodles, God. I eat too many noodles. My love for Asian-style noodles is unhealthy. I love noodles. And so, like, when I'm making one of these rice dishes or something, I'll often just make some miso soup because you can get this powdered dashi. Like, you made dashi from scratch. Dashi is like a Japanese fishy broth. It's not like the broth isn't fishy, but you make it from fish stuff. And so it has the flavor kind of a fish. It has the savoriness of fish, the umami. And so then you like dissolve some miso in it, which you talked about. It's like fermented soybean paste. It's often pretty salty, and it's fucking umami. It's savory. It's hard to explain. But I made it a lot because it's super simple. I'll just like throw in some powdered dashi into some water and then dissolve some miso, put in some soy, some mirin, Japanese rice wine.
Yeah, and it's so I made my own, as you mentioned, I made my own dashi, I made my own stock. And it was really, it took a little time, but it was really simple. It's just sort of like, okay, you soak seaweed in the water for a while, and you throw that away. Or you set some, but you set some, you can set some of it aside because I made my own furikake. So you set some of it aside if you want to do that, but you don't have to. And then you add the katsuobushi, which is like dried fish flakes, basically. But like this is one of those things where I feel like if you're a Westerner who hasn't had these things, you get the wrong idea, right?
It's like, yeah, I had the wrong idea.
Like, you say fish flakes to, like, an American... Well, first off, we're going to think, like, the stuff you give goldfish? No.
It honestly smells like it. Like...
Yeah, that's the other thing, though. Yeah. Is once you get past that, it's like, oh, this doesn't smell like... Like, this smells fishy, but it doesn't smell like...
The bad fishiness.
Right. You think of a fishy smell, and you're thinking of the bad part of it, right? You're thinking of the part where it's like, oh, ooh.
You're thinking of just, old rotted fish.
Right. And this just smells like kind of like... A light meat mixed with, you know, like seawater, right? Like,
and it's smoked, it smells... too. Like, katsuobushi is this... Well, it depends, but normally it's like a whole smoked fish that's, like, super smoked, and then you shave it super thin, and so it's got a smokiness to it as well.
Yeah, it's almost like jerky.
Yeah.
And so you put that in, you soak that at a hotter temperature for a little bit, and you remove that, and then you've got dashi. It's just that simple.
It's not strong. It's just a nice broth.
And you can save the katsuobushi, the fish flakes, and then a little bit of the seaweed, and use those to make furikake with a little, you know, like soy sauce and mirin and sake and sesame seeds.
And furikake is just like stuff to put over rice. It's like a topping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just like a rice topping. And then you just add miso. And maybe tofu and soy, you know, and some seaweed, and you're done. You're done.
It's nice. It's just like a nice simple side dish, I guess. Or you can make a bunch of it, and then it's a little more filling. But miso is godlike. I would urge everybody to try to find miso paste, like at your grocery store, if you're in a somewhat multicultural area with some sort of Asian presence. It's a Japanese thing, but it's the most widespread Japanese thing, probably.
It's honestly the situation where I'm starting to I don't know. I tried a lot of different foods growing up, right? But I didn't cook very many different foods growing up. And so I think I had sort of a distorted view of ingredients where I sort of thought of like basically the ingredients, the primary ingredients of French and Mexican cooking were like, oh, these are the ingredients that people use, right? And it's, and you know, like, oh, you, sometimes you can use like, you know, different, like more exotic ingredients, but that's kind of, you know, you're just kind of spicing things up. And if you get down, right down to it, you're probably still just using eggs and, you know, like, and that's sort of true, but like miso is, I feel like you can compare miso almost to like a curry, right?
Yeah.
Where it's like, no, it's just this essential type of flavor that can be the baseline for so many other things that just doesn't exist in Western cooking.
Yep. It's like the fermentedness of it. It's not like one of those it's not normally the kind of fermented thing where it has like funky flavor to it. It is it can be a little bit funky, but it's more like I keep saying this umami. It's like the sumptuousness, savoriness of it. It's good. Like fucking marinate a meat with miso just put some miso in there, it will become godlike, because it also semi-brine it, because it has a lot of salt mm-hmm. normally. But like miso marinated chicken on the grill, oh my goodness, so very good.
I actually had too much when I made the okonomiyaki. I did a shrimp based okonomiyaki, and I had too much shrimp left over. And so the next day, I was like, I need to use this shrimp. It's going to go bad. And I was like, I'm just gonna get like some miso, some butter, some soy sauce, some mirin, and I'm gonna make miso butter. And I'll put it on the shrimp and put the shrimp on rice. And it was really easy and really good.
Yep. Yeah, that's what I've been doing. I think it has something to do with like not having grown up with it. It being like somewhat mm-hmm. new to me. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just that good. Maybe it's just that, you know.
I mean, like it Asian seems like Japan mess. Seems to like it a fair bit too.
Yeah, I don't. Maybe so. They just got their shit together.
Yeah,
it's probably a case of like we don't get as bored with it easily. Like, because mm-hmm. I don't know. I really don't know much French cooking. I was trying to make a French cooking example. I don't know if we made an omelet. No, it's kind of, it's not really a French thing. If I mean, we made like is. One, it is technically, but like you got the American could omelet
do a,
and stuff.
Okay,
like.
Do a crepe or something.
Okay, yeah. If we had like a French style crepe every day, we'd probably get bored with that kind of thing. But I just, mm-hmm. I haven't gotten bored with Asian style, like specifically Chinese and Japanese stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a little tough to do a lot of Japanese stuff because it's based on like ingredients more than techniques and flavors a lot of the time. So, mm-hmm. and also, it's not very spicy a lot of time. I like spicy stuff to some extent. And Chinese food, like, depending on the you know, you can't just say Chinese food if you're trying to make authentic stuff because there's so many provinces and stuff. So.
It turns out China is the most populous country in the world, and there's a lot of things that make up Chinese cuisine. And a lot
I mean,
of variants
if I may, China number one.
You know, as far as cuisine, I don't have the experience to contest that statement.
That's fair.
And I'm excited to get it.
Have I told you about the restaurant in the underground Chinese supermarket I go to?
No.
What, are you sure? It's literally in the basement. Well, so this entire, I've talked about this underground Chinese supermarket I go to in Center City, mm-hmm. Philly. It's literally in the basement. Like, there's no windows. It's just an underground market. And in, like, one corner of this supermarket, there's this restaurant called Tasty Place. And there's this, like, older Chinese guy. And there's some staff. But it's just, like, in the corner of the supermarket, there's this unaffiliated, mostly, restaurant that makes ridiculously good, ridiculously cheap Cantonese food.
Hmm.
It's a... It's quite the experience. We decided, like, on a whim, like, okay, we're going to try this Chinese basement food place one day. And then it was ridiculously good food, and we looked it up, and apparently it's, like, renowned for having ridiculously good food. But it's just this one guy. Not one guy, but, like, it's this one chef, mostly, cooking in the basement. It's excellent.
That sounds pretty fantastic. That's you know, you find these, they find these little places that just... This is not authentic in any way. but there was a Chinese place, when I used to live when I was a kid, called Nukahala. And you would come in and you'd be like, I'm gonna pay, like $6 for fried rice, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you would get like 3 pounds of chicken fried rice in this styrofoam container. They'd be like, okay, have fun. And it was really good fried rice. It had high quality ingredients, and it was like ridiculously cheap for the portions they would give you.
Yeah. Oh,
I love it's just this like, you know, like you walk in the door and, you know, the tiles are cracked and they've got these, you know, like generic thank you bags, and you're like, ah, yes, I have found a good restaurant.
I found American Chinese. Yes. I'm going to miss some of these weirder places when I leave Philly when I graduate.
Where are you going?
Back to Central Maryland for work. I don't know. I'll be kind of closer to Baltimore. I'm going to have to – and in a little bit I'll be out of my like rural hometown of Maryland where it's like lots of farming, like 93% white. It's very like monocultural.
Mm-hmm.
And I've developed tastes that need to be satisfied. I think, you know, all this discussion is very relevant to Jackie's Chow too, because Jackie Mao is, you know, somewhat of a Japan otaku. He likes Japanese stuff, right? He likes the animes. So I believe mm-hmm. he also likes Japanese food. So I'm glad we could keep on theme.
Absolutely. I'm glad we had something for him.
That's what it's all about. Jackie Mao.
Really is. Really is. All right. Well, I think that's it for this week's episode of Bottle Crow. We managed to come in at a reasonable time. I assure you, it was not on purpose.
Absolutely. Nothing is ever on purpose, for the most part, on this podcast. For better or most likely for worse.
All right. Well, thank you so much, everyone, for listening. This has been another episode of Bottle Crow Reborn. You can find us on your podcast of choice. In fact, you probably did. But while you're there, you might as well give us a rating or review if your app offers that option. Help us get some more attention. You know, I think we put on a good show here, and I think I get numbers, and our listeners, all you out there, are very faithful, and we really appreciate it. But we also haven't done much growing because we're bad at finding new people.
We should probably try harder too. We should probably do literally anything to try.
I make podcasts. Isn't that good enough?
I publish this thing to the internet.
Yeah, no, we should do something. But you know what? You could also help us, and you don't have to. We're not forcing you.
Wow,
we're not twisting your arm.
Really, do you think they deserve? You know, we deserve this. These
you
greedy
know, actually,
people.
I think we do.
Well, that's good.
I think we deserve a little shout out. I think we deserve you to let your friends know that this is a good podcast and they should listen to it.
That's a confident podcaster right there.
It turns out I'm on 6 shows now. And I hang out with other podcasters and they're like, man, you do good work. And I'm like, you know what? Maybe I do.
Maybe I fucking do.
So, yeah.
Great. Our music is Rift Shadow Ruins by Jeffrey Brace, a.k.a. Promoti. Promoti? I fucked it up. I tried to help.
Promoting Promoti. There we go. Yeah. You can find that in the Steam Workshop. There's a link in our show notes if you want to vote for it and help it get into the game. I think we got a good shot with this one. Yeah, there's not a lot of time on this one, though it could, of course, be added later. Valve's ways are ever fickle. I also want to give a thank you to Ashley Ryan, a.k.a. Svimmy, who did our podcast art. You can find more of her work at twitter.com/Svimmy, and if you want to get a commission of your own, you should head to patreon.com/Svimmy. If you want to play a game of Dota with me, I was going to make a joke here, and I don't have anything ready. I figured I'd think of something by the time I got here, and I didn't.
Then send your Steam ID to Nick or Colin at bottlecrow.com.
You know what? Yeah, if you send it, if you hit up that Bottle Crow Twitter, at Bottle Crow on Twitter, and you're like, hey, you should play a game of Dota with me. I don't know, I might.
No,
that
I'm not.
That doesn't seem impossible.
You will. Yeah. I will make sure.
Scheduling might be an issue, but I'm down.
We'll work
idea.
It out. We'll skip a podcast. I'm not afraid.
Thanks, Nick. You're not afraid to not record.
It's a lot of work on my part to not record.
Very noble of you.
Yes.
All right, well, I think that's it for us here at Bottle Crow. Thank you again for listening, and we'll see you next time. Peace out.
Is he going to say it? Is he going to say it?
Congratulations to the people partying downstairs of Nick, who you've no doubt heard the Rockin' Rhythms. That's the new music pack. Rockin' Rhythms of Nick's neighbors.
Video game kids with our Rockin' Rhythms.
You just gotta record it and turn it into a music pack and put it on the Steam Workshop. Rockin' Rhythms of Nick's Neighbors.
Rockin' Rhythms of Nick's Neighbors. That's a surprisingly good title, actually.
It
Nick's
turns
Neighbors
out, I'm a writer.
Kind of rolls off the tongue. Wow.
I'm gonna give myself credit for this and not you. All right. Night, everybody.